listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Good week this week.
It's pretty solid.
It's always a good week when I'm with my bros.
Oh.
I'm happy you feel that way.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen you guys in a couple weeks. We've been gone for the holiday. I missed you. I'm sure the people missed us.
I think that's a guaranteed. And I brought you a present.
You did. So it was like Christmas all over again for me. It was fantastic.
See, you're welcome.
I think both of you, I ran into a handful of listeners over the holidays. People that listen to this show and either have found us on social media, found us on YouTube, listened to it on the radio each week. So that's kind of fun to like actually get some traction there.
It blows my mind when I'm in carpool or whatever, or I'm in a meeting and they're like, oh, aren't you? And I'm like, you people actually listen. I am mind blown.
And then they can just see you on the news and stuff too.
Okay, listen, we didn't need to bring that up. Okay.
I still have the screenshot. I'll send it to you.
Of course you do. Oh, I got a screenshot.
That's fantastic. Well, we got a good show for you this week. We have a guest in studio, a guest back in studio, friend of the show that's been here before. Rhett Acker is here with Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company.
Yes, sir.
Doing it.
Welcome back, man.
Hey, thanks for having me again. It's a pleasure.
Second year.
Hey, I gotta stop us real quick. We haven't introduced ourselves.
I forgot what we're doing.
I know.
It's been a while.
It's the button clicking, right?
Yeah. He's so confused by the fact that he has to switch the cameras and he forgot how to intro the show.
So I've got a lot going on.
Why don't we take it back a second there, Team Apes?
This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples.
I shot a bear.
I love that so much. How could I ever forget?
I don't know.
That's Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
It's so good. It's such a different vibe than my old one, but I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's good. And now just pretend you don't know who our guest is, all right? Everybody, theater of the mind. This is radio.
Yep. We're going back. We're going back. We're going back in time.
Rewind.
Yeah. Do that one more time, Goldfish. Yeah, that was really good. All right. We've got a special guest in studio this week. You may know his name. Yeah, it's the real deal. Take the tarp off. He's getting ready to play.
Folks, the gyms are here. We're setting the tone.
From Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company, help us welcome Rhett Acker.
Hey, that may be the coolest thing I've ever been a part of.
We're here for you, man. We're here for you. We think it's pretty fire.
I just try to make people's dreams come true a little bit at a time.
Just a little bit at a time.
Yeah. Not big dreams, just little dreams.
Just little dreams that add up to big feels.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
We need to have like a survey or something that we send our guests. Like, if I had your height, I'd throw it in right there, you know?
Yeah.
From whatever high school, standing at 6'2". Like,
yeah.
We'll go.
Let's go.
Undefeated at Jenga.
Yeah.
Hang on. Where'd you go to high school?
Colgate High School.
Colgate. This is going to sound good.
How tall are you?
Let's go 6'3".
Let's go 6'3". Let's go 240.
Nothing but muscle.
Running a 4.240.
Yeah. Backwards.
Yeah, and he is the hide-and-seek world champion.
blindfolded.
All right, we can do this. Goldfish, can you run that back for me again? Ready when you are.
Oh, we really are going to redo it and we're going to cut it.
No, I'm just saying we just got to do it the right way. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company out of Colgate High School, standing at 6'3", 240 pounds, he runs a 4.240 backwards and is your hide-and-seek world champion. Help us welcome Rhett Acker.
Dude, that slaps. That is so good. That is so good.
We might just do this. Like, forget the rest of the show.
Yeah. We don't actually have anything to talk about.
Yeah. That's it, guys. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah. Who's up next? What do you guys want to do? This is fun.
And send your money into us. We have a Venmo, and we will read your introductions.
There you go. You know, actually, during COVID, I did this a little bit.
You did what?
I don't know that I want this out there in the universe.
It's going.
Too late.
Send it.
I have a handful of, like, youth Little League baseball teams that I do walk-up intros for every year.
I love this.
And
you just record them and send them to them, and then they play them.
I'll just do it on my phone,
yeah.
And then they send me their songs, and I lay it over the track and basically send them a produced spot, if you will, of their walk-up. And I'll, you know, I've got a couple of guys on Twitter that hit me up every single year and say, hey, we added a couple new kids to the roster. Can we get a walk-up for this guy? And,
I'd like you to do one for me that I can just, like, play. Like, start showing up to meetings, not late, but make sure I'm the last one, and then just hit it on my phone.
Bro, get a smoke machine with you.
Dude.
Put it right by the
door. Little smog machine.
Yeah.
And just, like, always be the last guy in and just let it rip.
Josh, he's always late, but man, that production value.
Dude, is he.
100%.
Yeah, we can come up with something. Anyways, Rhett Acker, 6'3", 240, man.
6'3", 240.
I feel like
4.240 backwards.
Yeah, that's right.
Hide and seek world champion. No surprise when you can run a 4.240 backwards, though, you know?
That's true. I bet that's advantageous in that sport.
For the hiding. Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably pretty good for the seeking part. You know, people forget about that. To become the world champion, hide and seek world champion, it's not just about the hiding. You got to be good at the seeking too.
Yeah.
Finally, someone understands.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's welcome. I mean, I'm glad to be around like-minded people. I understand the work that goes into accomplishing this feat. You know.
I know, dude.
I think the concept of whatever the last 5 minutes has been, and you ending it with like-minded individuals, might be the scariest conversation we've ever had.
I think so.
I literally did meet a guy though, on the fly fishing film tour many, many years ago, and that was his voicemail. Was that he was the hide and seek world champion?
It's kind of hard to fact check.
Yeah.
You know, that's
it
on like
awesome.
ESPN now. Have you ever seen this?
Yeah. No, the tag.
The tag. Yeah,
the competitive tag.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
That's what it's like chasing goals, you know?
Yeah.
They just keep running.
They just keep running from you. You know, I've decided that paintball is just adult hide and seek.
You're not wrong. That's 100% what
it
is.
Make sense. I'm not following. Adult hide and seek paintball.
Yeah, that's what paintball is hide and seek for adults.
You see that person, you shoot him.
Game over.
Boom.
Yeah.
And there's proof.
I feel like not so much with the hiding. Definitely the
seeking.
But
they're always hiding. Okay, whatever. You know what?
Yeah, I did hide whenever I was a kid playing paintball.
Yeah, you hide behind those things. I got a buddy. We should bring him on. He's with BHA. He's super. Him and his family are super into paintball. We should bring him on and have this discussion.
I've got a really good idea. What if we talked about the guests that we have on this week?
We are.
Yeah, I mean, my pastime, right?
Yeah.
Reliving the glory days here.
Yeah, I thought that's what we were doing. I thought we were making it relevant to the guest.
Right.
Are we not?
I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyways.
Won't be the first time on today's show that teammates will stand corrected.
Listen, I'm just fighting for my life over here on the switcher with these.
That's why
cameras,
I keep talking. So, yeah. Yep. That's why I just keep jumping in. So you got to jump to the next button. It's intentional.
Why don't we go back to Rhett? Tell us a little bit about your business. Second year in the thermal drone deer recovery business.
Yeah, that's right, man. Second year, we had a sort of an expansion this year. We brought on some more resources, expanded our team to about 11 pilots, brought on two more drones.
11 pilots?
Yeah, we got 11
pilots. I think he said pilots, yeah. I think. I don't know what a pilot is, but I heard what a pilot is.
That's, I think, how they teach it at Colgate. That's
that Colgate education.
That's that Colgate, son.
So tell us about
it. I love it.
You ran, what, two pilots the first year?
Oh, we had four the first year. And realized that was not going to be enough. And then we really expanded in the off season. And anyway, we got guys all over the state in each quadrant now. And that's really brought down that mileage fee that you get and expanded our reach and our resources and time so we can get to calls a lot quicker. And anyway, it's really paid off. I mean, we've had a heck of a year, blessed to have a heck of a year there. Can't brag about our team enough. I mean, we've got some really good dudes that go all out. So
you about got a call from me and Team Mapes last week. Keep that phone close this weekend. Me and Mapes are gonna go hit it hard for some late season action. And man, yeah, there was one you were probably gonna get a phone call.
Yeah, we've
luckily I missed. So
yeah, we both missed last weekend. Actually, yeah. We both took shots.
We did.
Freezing Queens. I will say this. Old nanny does are so hard to kill.
Yeah, I've...
He paused like he does not agree with you. And he's like, but I'm on his show, so I'm going to be nice. No. But his face is like, nah, you just suck.
No, I can't tell you how many times, man, that old does, you know, kept you from really making that shot. It happened to me in Kansas this year.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, I ended up shooting a deer with my muzzleloader, and muzzleloaders are notorious for not bleeding. I highly disregard a muzzleloader, but my rest moved on my bow the day before I was leaving, and I was dialed in at 50, and I'm like, I can't get this thing back sighted in time.
So hang on. I didn't know this. You're saying that muzzleloaders, if you shoot a deer with muzzleloader, they're notorious for not bleeding?
Oh,
is it just internal? Is that typically...
No, I haven't. I mean, I don't really know the science behind it. I just know that they.
Yeah,
don't.
We're not scientists here, bro.
I'm from Colgate, man. Come on,
pilot
scientist was last right? week. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a Kurt Kowalski question.
Have you heard this?
What?
Do you know what? That? Is that something
let's,
you're familiar
let's
with?
Don't. Okay. Let's don't have me go down this rabbit hole because I have an opinion. But
but you've
not,
heard that, right?
I think. From an ethical perspective, I don't understand why the season exists.
Muzzler?
Yeah.
Why is that? Just because of the lack of bleeding?
No, I mean, lack of accuracy, lack of bleeding. I think people are like, oh, I can get that. They haven't put in the time. They're not proficient with the weapon. They're just trying to get more time hunting. And so they pull the tag, they go out and do it. And I think very few people are competent with them. And I think I would... My guess would be that there are more poor shots during muzzleloader season than any other.
I would say that represents our data.
See, look at me.
So whether or not it's a poor shot versus
right.
the fact that they just don't bleed, you know, the deer that I shot, first of all, drones are illegal in Kansas. So I shot this deer, a heck of a story on it. I mean, it was a cool story. Slipped into its bed on its last day. Odds were against me. Anyway, came out 50 yards, shot it. I was thinking, okay, yeah, I mean, we're rock solid here. I get out, no blood. I'm like, oh, my goodness, no blood. And so I call Wendy Barnes out of Okmulgee. She's got a dog,
yeah.
Dang good dog.
Yeah.
And
is that the husband-wife? Duo?
Yeah, both
right.
of them came up. Yeah,
right.
Both of them came up. Zeus, I think is that dog's name. Anyway, she came and found blood, and long story short, it lived. Ended up getting shot by one of the other lease guys, but I ended up shooting a deer with my bow a month or so later. But muzzleloaders, I'll never use again. I'm just done using muzzleloaders because of that.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I get it. It's that extended season, but, man, I don't know. It's like I went and filmed a muzzleloader hunt in Idaho a couple years ago and for Muley, and I was already incredibly skeptical and had some feelings about it. And so I've personally, I'm not proficient with them. It's just not a world I play in. Now, I will say, I think you get Thompson centerfires or some of these nicer. But if it's in a state like Idaho, where it has to be iron sights, you can't have improved powder, you can't have any project, like there's all these limitations to it. I feel like they're just like, please hurt the animal. Like that's what the rule should say. Because it just doesn't make sense to me. But anyways, I digress. But after that hunt and what I saw happen, I was like, no, this isn't for me. I'd rather get better at bow hunting and put that time in and spend more time behind a bow than go grab that.
You know, so I probably ate my words. Kansas opens up with muzzleloader.
Uh-huh.
Now, the reason why I have opted to use muzzleloader during opening season in Kansas is because of how far of a shot, where we're hunting, hunt on the edge of a bean field typically, and I could slide in their bedding area, but truthfully, I just prefer to stay out and let them come to me. Having the versatility of being able to reach out there and poke one, that's always been attractive. The execution side of it has not necessarily been there for me personally. The thought, so every year I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go with my bow, but then I'll talk myself into, you know, using a muzzleloader. Now I will say that the Paramounts,
yeah,
those Paramounts are bad dudes. So CVA Paramounts,
yeah,
those are about the only
CVA makes such great.
Oh yeah, they're legit.
Man, they're so solid.
They're legit. I've got to give them. I've got to give credit where credit's due. I don't have a Paramount, but I know guys that do, and they seem to not have any issues. But nonetheless,
both CVA and Bagara, they're just, you know, same company here in the United States, and unbelievable firearms out of both those companies. But yeah,
I think sometimes Josh gets aggressive in opinion with things, and like,
duh,
I don't know. I'm sensing even just in the room now, like, you don't have to backtrack on the fact that you went black powder hunting.
Oh,
you know
I'm not
mean?
At all. No, in fact, whenever, hey, listen, I want to throw by.
He's 6'3", 240, bro. Like, don't.
I can hide from him too, right?
Yeah, this dude can stand on his own.
Hey, listen.
No. I'm just saying, I think what you're telling us, Josh, is true. Like, I agree with that perspective. I think that many outdoorsmen today say, to your point, there is a season for it, so I'm going to take advantage of it. But we've all got stories like that. I've never hunted with black powder, but I know guys. I knew a guy that drew kind of a once-in-a-lifetime moose tag outside of Fair Play, Colorado, a couple of years ago.
A black powder moose tag?
Yeah, well, so I think the way they do it now, don't quote me on this, but I think you get the tag for the year.
Right.
And then you get to hunt on whatever that method of take season is.
So it was a commissioner tag or a governor tag?
I don't know. But my
understanding, it was a special tag that gave you. So, like, if you get the Arizona, which are now defunct, then you can't get them anymore. But, like, the governor all-state mule deer tag, it lasted for the entire year. Any region you want, it gives you the entire state. And you have 12 whole months. So it could have been a tag like that.
And I'm sure a lot of this stuff is state by state, right? But
yep.
My understanding on this particular tag is they got to go pursue their bull moose with archery equipment. And then once that season ended and went to muzzleloader, then they get to go back into the same property, pursue it. He ends up killing his moose muzzleloader.
Good
but
for
I
him.
Know, I think they had to hit it. I'm not even going to say who this was because I'm going to get it wrong, but I think it was 5 or 7 rounds
my.
They had to put into this moose. And to your point, what are we doing?
I don't. That's my question. I don't know. We're probably gonna get eaten alive for this segment, by the way. But like,
please direct all of your inquiries,
all your hate,
to. You can send them to me. I'm not gonna read them, but you can send them to me.
Get them, Goldfish. Yeah, our producer will handle that for you. He's the active listener.
There you go.
We're just the talkers. But no, I just wonder if there's. I will say the technology has obviously gotten a lot better. I think there are very proficient and accurate muzzleloader firearms out there in today's world. What I don't understand is the states that have limited them. And I do know that there is a biological, like, take. It's intentionally harder. Like, they don't want you to be able to be as successful at the frequency that you can be with a, you know, a Bagara or, you know, a Weatherby Alpine or something like that. Like, I do
think...
They're
factoring it into their harvest limits and that stuff. Yeah,
I believe so.
Oh, has
again,
to
this is a Kirk Kuklinski question.
Sure.
But it's like when you mentioned you wanted to be able to reach out there, you know, and in your head you're like, well, the paper says it's, you know, and then you're like, but I'm not. That's how I am with a bow, right? Like, oh, cool. So this bow can shoot that fast and that far. Well, Josh Stratton can't. So,
it better be within 20 yards.
Okay.
Right?
Listen, it was dark. All right. Like, let's, all right. And it wasn't, by the way, it was legal shooting hour.
It was not legally dark. Yes.
Okay. Just to be clear there. No one's, you know, we're all above board here, folks. All right.
And truthfully, I mean, a lot of that can probably be chalked up to be like preparation.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, here's the deal. My dislike to muzzleloader season and black powder is subjective to my experience.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying holistically that it's wrong. I mean, I've killed and shot deer with muzzleloaders, and I'm extreme and no shame, whatever. But what I've experienced is that historically and statistically, my odds with a muzzleloader are lower.
They're low.
They're lower. So, and because of that, I don't want to do what I did this year again and shoot a deer and wound it and not find it, and you know what I mean, and put a deer through that. So that's my stance.
That's
on,
where
hey,
I'm coming from too, bud. Yeah.
What's interesting here, and I'm glad we have started this conversation with you because of your thermal drone recovery. You've got some data on the likelihood of recovering these animals, time of year, method of take, and I don't know how granular your research has actually been into your own data. We got to squeeze in a commercial break, but when we come back, I want to ask some more of those questions. You're chomping at the bit. I know you've got some more stuff to share with us.
Let's do it.
Okay. This is the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, and our friend from Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company, Rhett Atker, in studio this week. Rhett, in that first segment, we had some fun, but we hit on a couple of cool things talking about some statistics of recovery. You did a lot more calls this year two. Obviously, your name's out there a little bit more. I know you're pretty active in several of the Facebook groups around the area.
Probably has to do with the fact you came on the radio show, you know? I think that there's probably a direct correlation.
Came on the radio show.
And then, boom, now my business is exploding.
Tripled.
You know? Tripled thanks to the Outdoor Hour.
Yep. You can send those emails to me, though, actually.
tmaples@he'snotgonnarespond.com.
No, that's just you. Taylor.m at tylermedia.com if you'd like to advertise and have your business grow from being a part of the Outdoor Hour. Rhett, tell us about your year.
Yeah, no. So we'll watch it implode after that first segment.
I doubt that.
Oh, man. No. So, last year, as you guys know, we finished the year 76% success rate. 34% of the deer we found were dead. 66% were alive. That was quite a number. Reflected what our dog trackers are seeing on their site as well. This year, We had a goal, our pilots and I, we had a goal. We want to hit 80% success rate. We knew.
When you're talking about success rate, you mean you want to find 80% of the deer.
That's correct, yep. So you really have two metrics whenever you're going out with the drone. You have the recovery, which would be the, okay, it's dead, it's expired, and or you have the location of it. So in other words, okay, say, you know, Josh makes a bad shot this coming week, which is expected. You know, he's going to call me out here, right? He's going to call me out here.
I mean, I am going to call you, but I don't know why you got to throw me under the bus like that, bro. But that's all right. Okay. You're probably not wrong.
Wild man Stratton. So we're going to, you know, he calls me out. Okay, we find the deer alive, right? Well, we chalk that up as a success because we've located it. We've given him what we call a peace of mind of knowing, okay, that deer's probably going to be expired tomorrow or you know, that deer's going to live to see another day, whatever. If it's within daylight hours, we can even pursue that animal once the drone is stowed away. So those two metrics or those two criteria sort of build up what we call success rate. And I've got to, man, I've got to brag on my team. You know, our guys out of all regions killed it this year, man. They were on top of their game. And we ended up with an 81% success rate. Now, what's interesting is I was hoping to see a higher number than this. What is interesting is that, you know, last year we had a 34%. 34% of those deer were dead. 37% are dead this year, which yields, again, majority of the deer we found this year were alive. So, you know, I think that's, yeah, I think there's a pattern in there, and that pattern, I think, has been sort of consistent along with the dogs the past several years, too. So
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you do much follow-up? Because that data could be misleading in a lot of different ways, right?
Sure.
34% of the deer are dead last year. This year, 37% of the deer that you guys find are dead. Any idea how many of those deer will expire if given enough time? Like, given enough time, they're all going to expire because it's – the world.
That's called life.
Exactly. Sorry, children, if I've ruined that for you. But given enough time, all deer are going to expire. However,
yeah.
Do you have any idea how many of those deer you found that were still alive were fatally shot and bedded down, just hadn't expired yet, anything like that?
We do have that data. I don't have that data readily available at
sure.
this point in time. There were multiple calls where we would follow up. Either we'd go out there and find it for them, or they would send us a text, hey, that deer was there that morning type deal.
Because there's a difference between finding that deer bedded down somewhere, wrapped around a tree, but still breathing, versus that deer is moseying on down looking for the next food plot, completely disinterested with the bolt that, you know, hit him or something like that, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you know, when you look at the success rate, 81%, what would that be, 19? The 19% that was not found was not necessarily due to just us not being able to find them. And still, I mean, being the drones are relatively new still to the game, you know, sometimes we were sort of the last option. So, you know, folks are, you know, sort of exhausting every avenue. And by the time some of us got there, sometimes, you know, they had already searched on foot and with traditional means, you know, whatever. So, you know, the 19% unsuccessful, I would call it, it's not necessarily, you know, the drone not being able to find it because it's not capable. Several times the deer was just not there. I mean, especially mainly up in our northwest western part of the state where it's just wide open. We flew miles on several calls and that deer was just not anywhere to be found. You're like, where in the world could that deer be? And here's a funny story.
Aliens.
Here's a crazy story.
This just got real deep. Sorry.
Get this.
Go ahead.
There was a deer shot. We found him the night of, and the next morning, this is deer in rut, the next morning he was found 2.1 miles from where we found him dead. And you're thinking, man, like, you know, that's pretty, I think for a deer that's wounded and eventually going to expire, I think that's pretty remarkable that he sort of went that far. I mean, in my opinion. What do you think, Josh?
She was cute, you know? You know? She smelled nice.
But that's just a testament, like, right?
He had, you know? You said it was during the rut, right?
No, it was. And that's, yeah. That's what we probably think happened, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
but it's a testament to how
he literally gave it his life.
Priorities.
He gave her his life.
Yeah.
You know? Good for him.
Yeah.
Servant lover. That's what he was.
It's super interesting, though.
Let's keep this PG-13. Hey, there's kids listening.
For people that maybe aren't as familiar, like, we've had you on the show. We've joked about it. You know, you and I will exchange stuff on social media. I've even sent you a couple of leads over the last year from friends to say, hey, I know you know a drone guy. Tell our listeners a little bit more about what you actually do, the technology that you're using, because it's not just like line of sight type stuff. You're actually using thermal technology, which is pretty ridiculous that it's available just for businesses like yours. Talk a little bit more about the thermal technology and what you guys are actually doing.
So we use Matrice 30T drones, DJIs, and they're equipped with thermal infrared technology, as you're mentioning. And what we'll do is we'll come out and, especially like this time of year where the leaves are off, you know, because you're using thermal or you're using heat, there's nothing that can hide from you whenever the leaves are off. Now, October, it's a little bit different of a story. You got foliage, so the thermal, you really can't penetrate through all the leaves. But nonetheless, this time of year, you know, it's remarkable. So what we'll do is we'll put the drone in the air. We'll find these animals. We'll find these deer. And it's equipped with a light that mounts on top. Now, with thermal, if we got all four of us outside and we're looking, I can't tell you which one's who. I mean, I can't uniquely identify a subject just with the thermal imaging. So that's why we have the light. Whenever we identify or we see a deer, we will throw the thermal off. We'll turn the light on. And that's what uniquely identifies that subject. It brights it up as if you're looking at it during the daytime. So you're scanning your property. You're filtering through every deer, basically thermal signal, heat signature, until you find your deer. Now, in cases like the one we just discussed, sometimes those deer are off that property and you just, you know, where in there. And we look on neighbor's property, of course, but sometimes you fly 4 or 5 miles, not necessarily like linearly, but within a radius or within a diameter. And sometimes they're just not there. And you're like, man, that's crazy. Like,
when you're working the grid system.
Absolutely.
Most of the time. Yeah.
So what we do is, and I instruct my guys to do this too. We always work the grid system, but what I found to be most advantageous is within the controller, you can actually create blocks. You can create sections, color coordinated sections of what you want to fly. Now, I find that more advantageous because it's a bit more structured. It's a bit more formal so that you can take each color and specifically fly that. And I've got some examples on our social media on what that looks like. But it provides a level of organization that I like, you know, for us to have as a team. And like I said, our guys have knocked it out of the park, and that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, we had such successful years, these guys taking it slow and steady.
We got to squeeze in one more quick break here. When we come back, I got a few more questions for you. I think you know this, Josh. I was out with some falconers over the weekend.
He was, yeah.
And the topic
He's not lying.
The topic of drones came up. And because we had you on the show previously, if you remember, listeners, Wade Farrar was here, who is with the ODWC, and shed some light for us on the legality of using these and other vehicles. I was actually able to offer some insight into these falconers and how they can use drones. And so we'll talk a little bit more about the legality of this, answer some of those questions in the final segment ahead. Before we get out of here, I want to talk to you about our friends over at JD Adams & Company. It's the fly shop here in Oklahoma City. You've heard us talk about it for years now. They're located on the northwest corner of 122nd and North May Avenue, and I can't say enough good things about the products they offer, the people that are in there, and everything that they're doing at JD Adams & Company. So if you're an angler and you're interested in getting into fly fishing, or you're already a fly fisherman and you want to go travel the world, or target species right here in your own backyard of Oklahoma City, go see those guys at JD Adams and Company. Look for the sign that says Fly Shop on the building at 122nd and North May Avenue here in Oklahoma City. We'll be back on 107.7 The Franchise with the Outdoor Hour after this.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, and our guest from Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company, Rhett Acker, in studio this week. On the ones and twos behind the glass, that's Maddie Goldfish.
Maddie's watching TV.
Hello.
I just had to sneak in a look at Goldfish there. Hey, we're talking about drone recovery. The thermal stuff you do is really cool. We were talking during the break. One of my good friends, Jace Brewer, flew for you last year.
Yeah.
So I actually got to see your drones in action because we'd break them out a couple of times at the end of a deer hunt.
That's why they didn't work.
That's probably true.
That's how he shot his deer last year.
Oh, that is a joke. That is a joke, folks. That is a joke.
That is a joke, yep.
That is a joke.
But I've seen these in action, and you're right. The thermal is super rad because you get up there and you can see the heat signatures from animals, and you don't necessarily know what they are. Like, you can tell a person versus a deer, that kind of stuff. But as you're flying around these properties in the dark, it's really cool then to be able to say, okay, these are deer moving here, and you can almost spotlight them, for lack of a better word. You turn off the thermal, you turn on just like an LED or something like that, and you have the ability to zoom in a little bit, get a little bit closer, and actually identify an animal. I think the last time you were here, Josh kind of got on a soapbox, as he tends to do, because this,
as the world turns, that's my other day job.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is a technology, and the way that the laws are written in Oklahoma, it affords us the ability to do some stuff with drones that in other states you just can't do. Mm-hmm. And I know Josh had opinions on this. This is something I ran into working with some falconers this week. Because they will use oftentimes drones to train birds, especially falcons that are going to not hunt directly off of your fist, but fly around and wait for, you know, its prey and then come down and stoop. But they had some questions about, well, can we use those drones, whether we're training or whether we're looking for ducks or something, and then go back and actually get our falcons out to go hunt those ponds? And thanks to Wade Farrar and you being on the show last time, I was able to help them know that as long as the drone is put up before you go retrieve the method of take, you're at least within the laws of the state of Oklahoma. Have you run into any other big questions or gray areas? Is there anything 2 years in now you feel like that we need to discuss, whether it's to help your clients, help the deer hunters better understand the laws, or is there any gray areas that people need to discuss more? Like, what is your position today on the way the laws are written for Oklahoma in terms of drone usage in hunting?
Yeah, so I think quick clarification, you know, you're afforded the opportunity to stow your drone and pursue the animal, the deer specifically, say, like, within shooting hours. However, birds, I think it's, I don't think it's the Airborne Hunting Act Chapter 19. It's a different chapter. Once you throw the drone in the air and scout for birds, you're required to wait 24 hours before you pursue them. So I think a follow-up to your falconer buddy probably is needed, just to let him know, hey, you know, yeah, you can scout with your drone for ducks, but legally you're not obliged to pursue the ducks with your falcon until probably 24 hours later.
Yeah, of any kind.
Yeah.
Whether you're using a falcon or not.
Now, with a deer, you're right, it's different. I mean, we've had multiple cases where, and I like that law. I don't know if it's a law. I like that we can do that, because the last thing you want to see is a deer suffering. In fact, what I would, and I've said it before, what I would really like to see Oklahoma do, and I don't foresee this ever happening, kind of like Texas, being able to go in and there's got to be a lot of stipulations around it. But whenever you recover, when you locate a deer that's mortally wounded and you know that it's going to expire, being able to go in on foot and
dispatch
that animal. Because, again, it's 37. I'm not doing math today, but the 37% were dead, so the remaining were alive. In a lot of those cases, that's exactly kind of what that, you know, that's the situation that we found ourselves in.
Yeah, so you're saying having that intel of knowing that that deer is mortally wounded but hasn't expired gives you intel and information that now you've kind of got an obligation to go in and do the ethical thing and dispatch that animal rather than making it wait out its time.
But that could be gray, too, because that's subjective to the opinion of the operator. And then at what point, how do you know, how do you regulate that, right? I mean, these are some conversations I've had with leadership. How do you regulate, okay, I'm flying a drone and here's a deer that's wounded. How do you instill trust in someone to make that call, right? I mean, okay, here's a deer that's hit in the hind quarter that, okay, it sucks that it's alive and it's hurt significantly, but mortally wounded, if it hit that artery, probably not, right? Okay, well then how do you say, okay, it was mortally wounded, therefore I went and dispatched the animal, when in all actuality I understand there's some great matter there.
Yeah, but it's an easy, it seems to me that there's an easy solution to that of like, okay, if a drone operator was called to help recover a deer and a second shot was put on that deer after legal shooting hours, then you have to report that in a different form than just my tags filled, right? And you have to leave that animal other than gutted exactly as it is for up to a certain amount of hours. And then a game warden or someone has to come and examine it. And if they find that the initial shot was not fatal, then you would be subject to penalty.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like that's reasonable. I don't know how reasonable a lot of...
how practical it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying.
I mean, there's a simple solution. I'm not saying it's a reasonable solution or actionable, but you just have to build more... you have to build in more process, which... you know, I'm not here condoning a bunch of more process.
And that's what's that, hanging me sure, up is sure. I feel like this is, it's not practical to execute.
It is
but
practical.
But I think you've articulately defined a solution there. Yeah.
I mean, I would argue, like, I like that in daylight, in legal shooting hours, it can be pursued again. But I think that there needs to be more to that story, meaning I don't think you should be able to legally fly a drone in Oklahoma in hunting season unless you're a licensed drone recovery company.
Ooh, that's steep. I mean, that's...
no, because, hold on, because how the law is currently written, I can go down to Best Buy and walk out with a drone today, and I can fly that drone, based upon what you're saying. I could find a deer. I can go put my drone up. And I can go hunt it. That should not be allowed.
Yeah, I see your point. Yeah.
Right? Because there is no regulation or industry around drone recovery or being a licensed drone operator.
What I would like to see is literature or litigation in place for drone trackers. So... build structure around the actual industry itself rather than
hobbyists. Make it an industry. Yep.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it sort of authorizes those with, say, permits or license, if you want, whatever it may be.
No different than being a fishing guy in the state of Oklahoma. I got to fill out the paperwork, I got to pay the $90, and they're going to mail it to me. At least we have knowledge of how many people are out there proclaiming themselves to be a fishing guide.
Mm-hmm.
There should be some type of registration of drone, purely more beneficial for the end user. You know, not in a regulatory way, but like, how do I know?
Yeah, and if you remember the first time Wade and I were on, we advocated for that.
Yeah, from both parties. You know, I think that that's a way to take things that would be legitimize, but also help with a resource center, right? In the sense of, where do I find that? How great would it be if on my Outdoor Oklahoma app, when I'm going to, you know, fulfill that tag to do the mobile check-in, underneath that app, there was a recovery resource button. And I could click on that recovery resource, and it would give me my options from either dog or drone.
Yeah.
And that everyone listed there was registered and had some type of background or something that had gone on where I know this is a legitimate person who is going to legitimately do the service I'm paying them for, and they have a high success rate. And cool. Awesome. Great. Now we're recovering more deer. Now we're, you know, there's just, I think, a lot of benefit to that from an end user perspective. If we could legitimize or at least collect that data and put it in one place for hunters of Oklahoma to have resource to. Instead, I got to jump on Google. It's not all there. I don't know how many of you guys hunt where a place where the internet works.
Yeah.
You know,
well, especially like, if they're embedded by the Department of Wildlife. Too, right. Right. And I want to go back to a comment you mentioned, you know, it's interesting. Someone going to Best Buy, buy a drone, put it in the air, stow it, go shoot that animal. I would also argue that it's no different than a thermal scope, right? I mean, someone going in and buying a thermal scope, then going out at night and shooting a buck. So I think when we talk about this, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs, and those what ifs are certainly doable for folks. And that's why.
And to clarify, your drones are different, right? The entry point to getting a thermal drone, the barriers of entry are significantly higher.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that's significantly more expensive than even a prosumer level drone from DJI. You know.
But the point I'm trying to make is exactly what you've said is, you know, that's why I advocate so much for structure and legitimacy is because it's going to set people apart from, hey, you know, wanting skin in the game or kind of like your hobbyist. You know, I spoke with Wade too, and it sounds like that, you know, fortunately they haven't really had any issues with the drone trackers. It's just been the, you know, average Joes with their drones, you know, getting right. I mean, the ones that are having issues. So I hope to see. To answer your question, I mean, I currently like the way that the laws are written about it. I mean, they advocate for us. As you can see, there's definitely a demand for drones. I mean, I think we've definitely proven ourselves. And industry-wide, I mean, you've got a lot of different drone companies out there. So I think, you know, moving forward, what I would like to see is the legitimacy. I'm hoping that they don't make it to where, you know, you fly and then you have to wait that 24-hour period, because I think that could probably have a negative impact to the end user. So who knows? It's going to be exciting year to kind of see what they come out with, but I do expect some litigation or some literature be implemented this year.
I like to give you a hard time about jumping on your soapbox for this specifically, but it's obvious that there's a need for these kinds of conversations. What I think, not to put words in your mouth, Josh, but I feel like you get worked up over things where you feel like the laws and the ethics of the endeavor conflict and don't align.
Yeah, I just think we should always – I think we can overcomplicate things through legislation sometimes, but we can also, out of a fear of overcomplicating, particularly in a state that is probably less pro-government than others, we try to keep legislation and government out of our wildlife, particularly when your wildlife department is overseen and basically run by the legislation. So there's a lot at play, but I think often there actually is a simple solution. And our intent has to be, there should be freedom of business. There should be, you know, things that are put into the public trust are intended to benefit the public. And I personally believe that private business can stand up inside of those constraints of the public's trust, that being our wildlife. I think that individual rights and freedoms to pursue have to be protected in that as well. But we at the bottom line, like the questions we're talking about right now, if our intent was what is best for the herd, there's really simple solutions here, in my opinion. And an animal suffering because we don't want to create another law or we don't want more laws around our hunting doesn't make any sense to me. Creating an opportunity for someone to violate and hunt in a way that I believe is unethical doesn't make any sense to me. And so, but also not giving an opportunity to legitimate organizations like yours to stand up a viable business that then puts food on the table and roofs over the heads of wives and children and creates opportunity to live the life they want to live in Oklahoma doesn't make sense to me either. And so there has to be a set of regulations that can be put into place that benefit both the animal and the individual. And I think we've missed an opportunity to do that as it relates to this specific thing. I don't know.
Maybe not missed.
Maybe it's just an opportunity.
Well, keep in mind, I mean, our legislation, our law, our regulations right now, I mean, our regulations have not ever accounted for a drone because it's brand new technology. So maybe whenever they update it, at that point in time, maybe it's a miss. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're just early. Yeah.
Early?
I think these are conversations.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, these are conversations that need to happen, and it's one of the things we love about the show is getting to drive some of this conversation.
Maybe. In the sense of, like, it's no longer early if the technology is being used,
sure,
in my opinion, because we're talking about a resource, right? Like,
early maybe is the wrong word. It feels like we're in our infancy stages with this, still in this state.
Maybe in general we're in our infancies in this, but infancy shouldn't be an excuse for not acting.
Sure, sure.
Right? Newness shouldn't be a, well, let's see how this shakes out. Like, no. Just make a decision. Laws are changeable. Regulations are changeable. You don't have to get it right the first time. And I think often we postpone trying to find the perfect regulation instead of just being okay with good regulation. And if we were more open to the idea that through time we will learn, we will grow, we will take in data, that data is going to impact the decisions we're making, and that today's law may not be the best law 12, 24, you know, 100 months from now, but we're going to do what we know now for the betterment of the people and the animal, and then we're going to allow data to come in and suggest how we need to alter that. And if that was the approach, I think, you know, and I will say, I think ODWC, with the amount of research they do, that is their intent, right? Like, they do an astronomical amount of research so that they have the data to make educated right decisions, and they're going to allow continuous data to prompt them to make the changes they need to make. And I think they do a really good job at that. I don't know if we're implementing that same process as we look at it from a legislative perspective.
Yeah, that's good. Guys, I hate to do this, but we got to get out of here.
He
we're
loves
up against
it.
The clock.
He wants to go.
This is the Outdoor Hour. That's Rhett Acker, Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company. Rhett, where can people find you to get a hold of you?
www.oklahomadrc.com or on Facebook, Oklahoma Drone Recovery Company.
Yeah, and I know you're on Instagram too. You got a social
Oklahoma
handle.
Yep, Oklahoma DRC. Just want to thank all of you who have used this year. Appreciate your support and your ongoing business.
This is a spicy topic, it feels like, at times. So happy to have you back, and we can continue the conversation. And
he's so soft.
Hopefully start to
drive spicy to him.
I love
conversation. So I'm Taylor Maples. That's Joshua Wildman Stratton. You can find him on social media. Direct your hate mail to
don't
at
@against_current.
We'll just have a lovely, educated conversation about opinions, and then still love each other because we're all hunters and anglers.
Let's do it. That's Red Acker. That is Maddie Goldfish. I am Taylor Maples. You can find me at @T_Maples on social media. Don't forget, you can always find the show itself at @Outdoor_Hour. We're now on YouTube, so if you want to watch this show being produced with video, you can do it there on YouTube. It's the Franchise Sports YouTube page, the Outdoor Hour channel. Just search for the Outdoor Hour and you'll find us. You can also podcast these and listen to them later. But we're available on social media, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at @Outdoor_Hour. That's going to do it this week. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.